Let's talk some basketball. John Corrales of Boston Sports Journal and the Locked On Celtics podcast joins us. Hello there, John.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Pretty well, thanks. How are you this afternoon?
Oh, I'm great.
Glad to hear that. All right, let's talk about the big trade so far in the offseason. Did the Wizards get enough for Bradley Beal?
No, but that's the perils of going for a guy, getting a guy on a no-trade clause. It was never going to be equal value. It was never going to be the right amount for him because he not only gets to veto trade, he gets to veto the framework of the trade. So not only could he go say, hey, I'm going to go to Phoenix, if the Wizards, I said Devin Booker wasn't involved. He could have said, no, I want to play with Devin Booker, so I am not going there for that deal. And so the Wizards had to just adjust and get back what they could for a team looking to rebuild. And that means some draft picks, which we, you know, second round picks is all Phoenix had, basically. Chris Paul, who doesn't want to play in Washington, so that's going to end up going somewhere else. And Landry Shamet, who is just, you know, hey, he's going to be there for, what, a season? They could turn around and trade him at the trade deadline. So it's tough, but, you know, the Wizards, they're in a tough spot.
Now, can Phoenix afford to pay all these guys? And haven't they looked at the recent history of these super teams in the NBA? It's not exactly a great track record.
I know. And the hope for them is that Devin Booker has made big strides forward, that this is a different kind of big three, that Kevin Durant was not the issue in Brooklyn, and that Bradley Beal is, after all of this time, willing to kind of take that third star role and sacrifice a little bit in the name of winning. But it is going to be super expensive. It's not going to be easy to pay him or pay them all, because in a couple of years, when that, or actually after next summer, that super tax apron comes in, that super tax line, and they'll be kind of stuck when it comes to adding complementary players. So the guys that they have are the guys that they have. There are guys that are going to have to get paid, and my suspicion is that they're going to start to overpay some of these guys, that not only are they going to just overpay to keep them, but also overpay in an effort to trade them, which is weird. It's one of those weird new byproducts of the new collective bargaining agreement. Phoenix are going to get caught up in the inability to trade for more than, basically, you can't take back more than you give out. It's got to be pretty much exact. So they're going to start overpaying guys in order to be able to trade them down the road one for one. It's a weird thing. And I probably lost half of your listeners there trying to explain it. But it's going to be one of those things that these teams that are in this potential super tax second apron line, they're going to have to find creative ways around some of the restrictions. And I think one of the creative ways is going to be a couple of role players getting paid more than you expect. And it's going to be weird, but it's in an effort to make trades down the road.
We're talking with John Corrales here on Downtown. Another familiar face added to the Celtics bench. What does Phil Pressey bring to the table?
It's another former player, another former point guard. You know, his father was a coach. His father actually had a stint with the Celtics once upon a time. It's another guy that's been around, that's played, that has kind of bounced around the world trying to carve together a career. And so it's just somebody else that the Celtics and their players can relate to. And I think, once again, this is the front office speaking to its stars. You want former players. You want guys like this on this coaching staff. We're going to fill it with this experience. And it's a varied experience. So Sam Cassell has won championship and played with stars, and is the biggest name. Charles Lee won a championship and is kind of like the in-between Sam Cassell and Phil Pressey. And Pressey is the guy who is the, you know what, you can never take this for granted guy. He's the guy that kind of relates to the end of the bench. So you kind of got Cassell can talk to the stars, Tatum and Brown. Lee can talk to the mid-tier guys, and Pressey can talk to the end-of-bench guys. You kind of have each tier covered as far as former players. But obviously, they're all going to work together to get that unified message across.
Hey, you talked about this, John, on a recent episode of the podcast. What is the best way for the Celtics to use Marcus Smart's talents?
Oh, yeah. Marcus Smart, you know, he's a point guard. He's been a point guard. And he at the beginning of the season, was used as the point guard. And the offense kind of flowed through him. And he was averaging 8 assists per game. But as the season progressed, he dropped down to, you know, four or five assists a game. And people will say, well, that's because he always wants to shoot. And the answer is actually no. He wants to pass more than anything. And when the Celtics get back to their habit of running all the offense through Jason Tatum, that kind of neutralizes Marcus Smart, and I think the Celtics have to make a decision here. It's either are you going to run your offense with a point guard, Marcus Smart as the guy, and have Tatum and Brown, obviously they're going to handle the ball some, but are you going to have these guys playing off of a point guard, or are you just going to have these guys handle the ball? And if you're just going to have Tatum and Brown handle the ball, mostly Tatum, then he's your de facto point guard. And you don't need a point guard necessarily. And you just move on from Marcus Smart and you get somebody else to play the wing and you just go like that. I don't think that's the best way to go. I don't think Tatum should be handling the ball as much as he is. Mm. I definitely don't think he should be handling the ball as much as he does over the course of the playoffs. So to have a point guard there that's willing to run offense, that's willing to move and hit cutters and all that, I think that's a luxury that they're not using well enough. So I think that Marcus Smart, just basically they need to use him as their primary, or if they want to even shift him to a backup, that's fine too, however it ends up going. But he has to be a full-time point guard and not some guy that's standing in the corner, because that's been how he's used the worst. Use him as a point guard, and the offense tends to flow better.
John, what should the Celtics be looking for in the second round of the draft, and what do you think they're targeting?
You know, the second round is like a crapshoot. It's so hard. You look at 10 different mock drafts, and you got 10 different names for that 35th spot. I'm not so much looking positionally, right? I don't care if it's a guard, a wing, a big. At 35, you're hoping to hit on somebody. Like Draymond Green was the 35th pick in the draft. So if you can hit on a guy that comes out of nowhere and you're like, oh, wow, this guy's got all of these particular skills, this is amazing. You can celebrate that. It's about finding the guy that has some kind of elite skill, that one thing that you look at and go, wow. Okay, that is amazing, but he is either, you know, maybe size-wise, he's a little small for his position. Maybe he has other flaws that are causing him to drop. Maybe there's extenuating circumstances. You got to find a guy that has the right attitude and the right work ethic, that has that chip on his shoulder. It's about the mental kind of makeup of a guy in that spot. So when I think about hitting on a second rounder like Boston is going to be trying to do, I'm looking at guys that are there's a great defender, but he just can't shoot. And you draft him and you think, we're going to work on him, we're going to two-way him, and we're going to give him a year or two in the developmental season, in the developmental program, and you say, all right, we're working on his shot, we're working on mechanics, and we see if we can't teach him to be a decent shooter. Or vice versa. Maybe there's some guy out there that is a good shooter that he just can't defend. And you get him in your developmental program, and he is taught the skills and how to read things, and maybe that's what you do. But one or the other, I think you can teach those skills, and that's a way to maybe find some kind of diamond in the rough, so to speak, in that second round. The talent difference between 25 and 35 is negligible. Mm. So anybody that's down there might have enough of a chip on his shoulder for falling into the second round that you say that he's worth grabbing at that spot.
John Corrales, Boston Sports Journal, and the Locked On Celtics podcast. John, thank you much. Have a good weekend. We'll check in with you again next Tuesday.
My pleasure. Talk to you then.